Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
Seachtain, an Indo-Askeilige.
Táim I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chur, agus súligam amach an seo, gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara I gcuir na meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthchar an reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orthchar san I lis dúthail agus go mbeadh fanacht gáir a chloig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhíonn ann tar d'oraibh sé sin. Vin Marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
For your average person who wants a great watch to monitor a couple of runs twice a week and maybe a gym session, and wants a watch to help them do things, as you said, like payments and show your boarding pass, you're probably better off spending your money on a generalist rather than a specialist watch. However, if those features don't matter enough to you and you're more into your running or your cycling, then yeah, the more specialist stuff like Garmin and Polar are kind of the ones you want to start thinking about getting. You don't need to spend £700-800 for a great piece of kit. I think if I were spending my own money, I'd choose something like the Garmin Forerunner 265, or even something cheaper, something like a Polar Pacer Pro or a Coros Pace 3.
Hello and you're welcome to the Big Tech Show with me, Adrian Weckler. Now, what fitness smartwatch or wearable should you get? Are general smartwatches from Apple and Samsung now good enough? Or are you better off getting a specialist one from the likes of Garmin or Fitbit or others? And might one of the latest smart rings or other fitness trackers be a decent alternative? Well, Matt Evans is the fitness and wearables editor at TechRadar, which is an excellent website worth checking out on all stuff tech. And he's here with me now. Matt, to start with, a lot of people would have an Apple Watch, for example, and others might be considering getting one. How does that rate as a fitness device compared to the purer brands?
Adrian, it actually compares really well. One of the great advantages of Apple Watches is that it's a lot of people have iPhones, and it's the thing that works the best with your iPhone. Mm. So it's on your wrist kind of all the time. So it's not only monitoring your exercise, but it's also monitoring your recovery. It's also monitoring how many steps you take during the day. So as a general fitness device, it's really, really good.
Sometimes I hear people who are runners or fitness specialists like yourself, they do things like they compare, you know, how the wearable picks up a signal, stuff like that. I mean, is that an issue with an Apple Watch?
We can take a look at GPS. GPS is the way the Apple Watch is going to pick up your location and where you are. And that's then going to feed into the algorithm based on how fast you might run or cycle or swim. Mm. And it's really, really good at that. The Apple Watch Ultra, which is the premium, the watch which you might want to get if you're an athlete and you want an Apple Watch.
It's the most expensive. Or you're rich. Yes, definitely.
If you're rich as well, if you're somebody who wants to look like you do a lot of exercise as well, there's always that. But it's got really good GPS and it's highly rated by all accounts. It's a very good fitness watch, and the GPS accuracy is notoriously very good, especially in urban areas.
Can I ask, does it have any downsides compared to the purer fitness watch brands? But let's say I have an iPhone and I'm wondering, look, maybe an Apple Watch will be okay. Does it depend on how ambitious an athlete I am?
Sure. The main downside of Apple Watches, I think one of they're kind of jack of all trades and master of none. But if you want really specifics, if you're an athlete and you want to dial down into really specific metrics, you might need to get a specialist third-party app for your Apple Watch, or you might need to kind of dive into the weeds a bit there. Whereas some specialist tools, like you mentioned Garmin, there's also things like Polar and Coros and a whole bunch of other smartwatches they're kind of tailor-made, more stripped-back training tools for more athletics pursuits. The Apple Watch is a lifestyle watch that is also very good at fitness. Getting a specialist, the others are kind of specialist training tools.
Yeah.
The other one I would say, the other big downside for an Apple Watch is on battery life. Apple Watches only tend to last about 18 hours. And even the premium Apple Watch Ultra 2, the most advanced one, you can only get to about 36 to 40.
Okay. So, and I suppose conversely then, the trade-off is if you do choose one of those more specialist training watches, there are some features that you will miss out on that you would have got from the likes of an Apple Watch, control over certain things, being able to pay for things in some cases, being able to, swan through a boarding pass scanner in an airport, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's it. While quite a lot of the more specialist training watches have a lot of these functions now, you mentioned Garmin. Garmin have had Garmin Pay for quite a while, and it's that NFC payment technology, which does more or less the same thing as an Apple Watch. Stuff like boarding passes, you'll miss out on all the kind of lifestyle aspects that that make Apple Watches so attractive.
When I say Apple Watch, I might also say Samsung, for example. So the same question might apply if I have a Galaxy device, a phone, and I'm thinking about a smartwatch, a generalist one to complement that. I'm not going to get an Apple Watch. I might get a Samsung, a Galaxy Watch. Would it be fair to say that it does a competent job at the basic fitness stuff, or even maybe a slightly better than competent job at the basic fitness stuff?
I would say so. For your average person who wants a great watch to monitor a couple of runs twice a week and maybe a gym session, and wants a watch to help them do things, as you said, like payments and show your boarding pass and get your notifications and your WhatsApp, you're probably better off spending your money on a generalist rather than a specialist watch. However, if those features don't matter enough to you and you rather get the battery life and you're more into your running or your cycling or whatever it ends up being, then the more specialist stuff like Garmin and Polar are kind of the ones you want to start thinking about getting.
We've used the word Garmin now a few times. And so let's talk a little bit more about what, proper athletes, serious runners tend to favor. I've always had the impression that Garmin was kind of at the top of that pile. Am I right?
I would say that's fair. Garmin have a really good reputation as a maker of really good watches for endurance sports. And I think that's well deserved. It's not necessarily the be all and end all. There are quite a lot of athletes I've interviewed which don't use Garmin. There's been a lot of them I've interviewed, I'm expecting them to say they use a Garmin. So that kind of gives an indication that it really is. Whether it's at the top of the heap performance-wise is up for debate, but it's certainly one of the most popular. I interviewed a triathlete very recently, and she uses a Wahoo watch that's quite a few years old.
Wahoo? W-A-H-O-O?
W-A-H-O-O. Wow. They make, and the reason she uses that is they make turbo trainers for cycling. So when you clip your bike, so you train indoors, and you have the same thing, your power meters that you clip onto your bike, and it tells you how much power you're generating where you turn the pedals. And all this information feeds back to the watch. So you've got like a closed loop ecosystem. And as a triathlete, that's really useful to her. So it really kind of depends. If you're looking at an elite level, it depends on the sport you're going to do, what you want out of a watch, and how much money you've got to spend.
So like if you're running, for example, Garmin make a few different models. So the Forerunners are fairly popular. They tend to be fairly reasonably priced, like from about 150, 200 euro, 300-ish euro. You've got the Instinct models, and then you go up to the Phoenix models, which are a lot hardier. They're kind of crush-proof, bulletproof. You can dive with them. What is sufficient here for somebody who, let's say if you're training for a marathon, and so you're not a serious athlete, but you're serious enough to want to take it seriously. What is adequate for you?
I'm glad you asked that, because while I certainly wouldn't consider myself a serious athlete, and I am training for a marathon, so I can certainly answer with a degree of personal experience here. I am using a Garmin at the moment. I'm currently using a Garmin Epix Pro, which I've borrowed from the work cupboards.
Top of the range.
And it's too much watch for me. Right. I don't use half the features on it. Mm. It's massive.
It's giant.
It's great. It's really, really good.
I think it's the athletic equivalent of one of those giant Conor McGregor, obscenities that he sometimes turns up with. At the edge of fights. Yeah, this is a big watch.
Yeah, it's like bringing a Land Rover Defender when all you want to do is cross over the nearest field. You don't need it. It certainly looks good and it performs very well, but you don't need to spend £700-800 for a great piece of kit. I could certainly get on with, I think if I were spending my own money, I'd choose something like the Garmin Forerunner 265, which is a little bit cheaper. I think it came out last year at around, I don't know what it is in Ireland, but it was around £449 in the UK.
Okay.
Or even something cheaper, something like a Polar Pacer Pro or a Coros Pace 3.
Oh yeah.
And they're a little bit more plasticky to feel. So it doesn't feel as premium and it feels quite light on your wrists. And sometimes you might feel like you're strapping on like a little Buzz Lightyear children's toy or something. Mm. But it gives you all the information you need, a really comprehensive companion apps, and they're just great. When you start getting into the higher tier price points, you start paying for things like premium materials. So if you're running around on trails or climbing on rocks and things like that, you can scratch this, you can throw it around no problem. But if you're just kind of your average person who's quite fit and interested in running a marathon, one of these cheaper watches around the, again, I don't know what it would be in Ireland, probably between, 200 and 400 euros, you could get a great running watch.
I'm glad you mentioned Coros and Polar, because I've tried a couple of those watches before. And generally speaking, I've been very impressed with what they offer. They don't offer quite as much in terms of all of the features that their direct competitor, which is really Garmin, I think, offers. But the form factors tends to be quite nice. The higher end ones, really nice with the way they use crowns, the button arrays, all that kind of stuff. But they're not really as widely available as you would, a Fitbit or a Garmin. You don't find them as easily.
No, you don't. You have to, because they're quite specialist, you have to kind of know what you're looking for. And you have to go and do your research and go online and really kind of dig them out.
What about brands like Fitbit? A lot of people have Fitbits. It has always kind of been the entry fitness device for a huge number of people. I think it varies between Apple and Fitbit as to who sells the most. I think Apple sells the most, but Fitbit seems to sell more than any of the other brands. But is that really just for casual use, getting involved, at a non-committed level, or is there something more to be said for Fitbits?
I wouldn't say it's just for casual use. Apple definitely sell more. I think last time I looked, I looked it up, and I think Apple shifted something like 53 million watches in one of the quarters of last quarter of 2022. And in 2022 itself.
I mean, we know that Apple sells more watches than anyone else. Of any brand, of any type, is digital smartwatches or analog watches. Apple is the biggest watch seller straight in the world. But the Fitbit, is that just for beginners, or could somebody with greater ambition, would it be appropriate for them?
I would say it would be appropriate up to a point. When people are first starting out, and I tend to recommend them a fitness tracker rather than a full smartwatch.
So you're talking about the Charge 6, one of those kind of devices.
Yeah, the Charge 6 or the Inspire 3, I would say, which are the two kind of, or the Lux, which are the three modern era Fitbits, which are in the classic band form factor. When you see somebody wearing a fitness band, you think, oh, that's a Fitbit, regardless of what brand it is. It's like, I guess, what's your ubiquitous like seeing somebody use a vacuum and say, oh, that's a Hoover.
And this is 100 quid territory. This is quite affordable territory we're in here.
Sometimes less. Especially if you're shopping around sales times, you can get an Inspire 3 in the UK. I don't know what it is in euros, but in the UK, you can quite happily get one for, you know, around 70 quid. So they really do become quite affordable. The biggest advantage to them is that they're simple, is that they're really, really simple. And if you're first getting into it, you can, you know, you've got something, okay, you open your phone and it's got your heart rate, your sleep, your steps, and the number of calories you've burned. We don't have to worry about GPS or ground contact time when you run or any of these other really nitty-gritty form factors. They're really, really good for first-timers. And again, as you've kind of implied, they've got a reputation as to being a great entry-level product.
And it's fair to say also that Fitbit does make larger form factors that look a little bit more like Apple Watches, the Versa range, the Versa 3, Versa 4, for example. Again, quite affordable in kind of the 200 euro-ish range.
They're not as good as some of the other watches, I must admit. Especially the latest ones. What, since Google has bought Fitbit, I've written quite a lot about this, but since Google has bought Fitbit, there has been, amongst heavy Fitbit users, a bit of an outcry over a slow axing of features to do with the community aspect of Fitbit wearers. So people who used to join online communities to, you know, challenge each other to compare their step counts and all that kind of thing, some of those features have been axed.
So what are they doing? Are they just trying to shoehorn them all into a Google Pixel watch buyers? Is that what's going on here?
I mean, I couldn't say with any certainty, but it does seem to be a case where the products that are still very good and are kind of getting prioritized are the slimmer band-based devices, the Fitbit Inspire 3, the Lux, the Charge 6, and the Google Pixel Watch 2, which is your all singing, all dancing Google equivalent of your Apple Watch.
Okay, so if you're gonna buy one of these, you know it's one of those models that you might think of, the Charge 6 or the Pixel 2. Fitbit is a good example of a service that also offers a premium subscription. I think it's a tenner a month or 8 quid a month, something like that. Are these generally worth signing up to?
It depends more or less on what your goals are and what your experience level is. I would say if you're somebody who is already looking for a challenge, if you're somebody who has been into fitness for a while, and you're already looking at, we use the training for a marathon example, but it doesn't have to be that extreme. If you're already into your fitness, you know what you like doing, you're in a routine, I wouldn't say paying for a service like Fitbit Premium is entirely necessary.
I think you get like 6 months free or something when you buy a Fitbit. And I remember looking at it and I found some of the sleep metrics to be sort of useful. But a lot of the other stuff like fitness how-tos and videos and all that sort of stuff, I kind of felt you could get similar on YouTube.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the only thing that services like Fitbit, and I know Apple do their own with Apple Fitness Plus, is that all these how-tos and fitness and recipe content comes from bona fide certified trainers. And rather than on YouTube, it might be just somebody who likes to do crunches and looks really good. They might, you don't know that what they're teaching you is necessarily the safest or the most effective thing.
Yeah.
So there's been some kind of quality assurance process.
Yeah. A quick word on sensors. Any smartwatch you buy now, you turn it over and it's got all these little sensors and you're trying to figure out what does what. I'm wondering, have we maxed out on sensors?
Yeah, I would say so. I think in terms of what you want to look for, there are usually three or four lights when you turn over your watch, and that will be, you know, they will look for things like heart rate, blood oxygen or SpO2, and they'll use LEDs to shine through your skin and monitor the blood flow through your skin. It's why they're more difficult for people with wrist tattoos to get the most out of these devices, because the light doesn't shine through as well.
Wow. First of all, what is a blood oxygen sensor?
A blood oxygen sensor is a collection of these LED lights that when you get the information back, it tells you how much oxygen is in your bloodstream. So how well your heart can pump oxygen through the rest of your body.
I think there's a range, isn't there? It's something like 93% to 96 or something. It's something like that. It's in the 90s.
Yeah. So it informs a lot of different metrics, like we mentioned blood oxygen itself, SpO2, but it also works to inform recovery your VO2 max, which is a numerical representation of your maximum effort. So if your VO2 max is like, let's say 59, that's a numerical representation of like the hardest you're working.
Right.
And the lower you can get that number, the fitter you are in a general sense.
I sometimes wonder how accurate the sensors are though, because like I have a blood oxygen sensor on my Apple Watch Ultra 2. And you know, every week or maybe every 2 weeks, I'll give it a go, and I'll look at what the percentage is. And sometimes it'll return something like 93%, which might be a percent or two below what it says the normal result is. And it freaks me out.
So there is this risk. We have to take all these metrics with a pinch of salt because, as you said, they're not certified medically. Some of them are. Some of the features on Apple Watches, for example, have gone through medical certification in some areas, like the American FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. Some of their features have gone through those qualifications. But there is absolutely an idea of too much information. The average person is very unlikely to need to know what their blood oxygen level is. I exercise quite a lot regularly, recreationally, and I don't pay any attention to sort of my blood oxygen on a day-to-day basis. Rarely, if ever, do I actually make a point of looking at it. I remember Fitbit releasing it around the time the first Fitbit Sense came out. They were championing their electrocardiogram scanning feature, which is normally a feature you can only get in hospitals. And so they were saying, I can take an ECG on the train or on the bus or at home. And I was just thinking, it's never occurred to me to want to take an ECG on the train.
Yeah, I think that ECG feature in particular might have been part of a marketing push to try and sell smartwatches to older people, I think, in particular. But finally, talk to me a little bit about smart rings, because these fitness trackers, they're becoming fitness trackers as well. And they're starting to enter the conversation a little bit as well, aren't they?
Sure. Smart rings have been around for quite a while, but they've been in their own very small little niche. The biggest one that has been around until very recently that you might have heard of was called the Aura Ring.
Mm.
And it is the size of, it comes in 10 different sizes depending on you know how big your fingers are, you go through you have to sign up online. They would send you a sizing chart. You'd put on the plastic ring that fits you best, send them back the information, and they'd send you a smart ring of the same size.
Wow.
And smart rings, what they kind of do is they take a lot of the sensors that are in your average smartwatch, things like the blood oxygen, as we've mentioned, some of the heart rate stuff, and they put it into a much smaller form factor. So through this information that they collect, they'll put it through the same kind of algorithms the information from your smartwatch goes through, and then they'll estimate calorie count, they'll estimate how many, they'll liaise with your phone, and they'll tell you how many steps you've taken that day. And they're less good at recording workouts because they're too small to have things like GPS. But the advantage is because they tend to last for 6 or 7 days, because other than collect this information, they don't do a lot. And they're very slender in terms of between smartwatches. They're very good at tracking sleep and recovery because you're able to wear them pretty much all the time. Since Samsung has come out and said, we're making a Samsung Galaxy Ring, the form factor's exploded in popularity. So we're going to be seeing a lot more of these very soon.
One ring maybe to rule them all. Any recommendations?
It's the Aura Ring, which is the one I've tried, is very good. but you have to sign up to one of these subscription services in order to make the most out of it. I'm really interested to see Samsung's offering. And there's another company called Eevee, which is making a smart ring aimed more towards women with some really interesting innovations in the form of cycle tracking. And it's got a break in the ring to account for the fact that women's hands and fingers tend to decrease and increase in size more. So it's a little bit more flexible. There's some really interesting strides there.
Matt Evans, fitness and wearables editor at Tech Radar. Thank you very much for joining us on the Big Tech Show today. And thank you also to JJ Clark, who produced, to Rory Bones, who was on sound. And I'm Adrian Weckler. You've been listening to the Big Tech Show. We'll talk to you again soon.
Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.